16-year-old self, keep studying maths. For God's sake, you're studying maths. Like, it is important. It really, like, you're like, oh, this is rubbish, I hate it. Keep doing maths.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does. Today we're joined by my best friend, the enterprise customer success manager, Tom. Welcome to the show, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good. Yeah. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Long time no speak. So for the listeners of the podcast, Tom and I actually used to work together. But before we get into it, let's start with a little icebreaker.
Tom,
what did you want to be growing up?
Mate, you know what? I actually have no idea.
You wanted to be no idea?
No, I have no idea. Really a jockey, but I don't know why. I think my mum quite liked horse racing and I had a jockey hat, but I don't like horses really. So, but that is literally my answer, which is quite embarrassing.
You wanted to be a jockey?
I think so, yeah.
Do you still like horses now?
Not really. No, I find them a bit overwhelming, if I'm honest.
All right, good to know. Well, now we've got to know a little bit about you. Let's jump into it. So first question is, how do you define customer success, Tom?
Mate, good question. It's an ever-changing thing at the moment, but I would say, from my point of view, it's the person who, well, in a software world, who I guess should be quarterbacking. It's a very American phrase and I'm not a massive fan of, but effectively the person in control, your central midfielder, to use it for in our vernacular, right? But you're not necessarily the expert at anything per se, but you're pulling all the right people in when required to make sure that the customer, and in our world, the software customer, is getting what they need in a time-appropriate manner, with a view that you can then renew and upsell their contract because what you're selling or giving them or supporting them with is doing the job it should. I think aligned to that, really. That's kind of what your role is, but actually then for the client themselves, it's about making sure that the reason they bought the software, like the vision they were sold by the sales guys, right? And we all know about vision selling from sales guys and then the reality post sale. But like, but we should be helping them, you know, go, you know, we paid X for this because we thought this was going to happen, and getting as close to that as possible. And in fact, if anything, being even more strategic and opening their eyes to the possibility of ultimately buying more software, but buying more into the vision.
The common phrase used in customer success circles is sell the dream, customer success, service the nightmare.
Yeah, that's about right.
But with that, how long have you been doing customer success?
In different guises, probably the best part of sort of 15 years, I guess.
Amazing. And then to just take us on your journey to where you are today, could we have like a high level summary of did you go to university, the various jobs you've had? I know you spent some time in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
just mate. So we understand how you got here.
Got a degree in Spanish.
Oh,
a 2-2, good stuff.
Besman.
Really useful degree. I thought, you know what I should do? I should go and live in Asia because that's where they speak Spanish. I got a job. Well, actually, I wanted to go to Mexico City, but like, no, don't go there. Go to Hong Kong. It's much more kind of vibrant and sort of younger paced. So I went to Hong Kong and worked for a company basically hammering like an SDR in our world, but like in the financial markets, trying to sell sort of investment funds to expats, so getting taxed less, they got more expendable income, which was awful. Like, first day was, here's a list of names to call. It was during the financial crisis. I just had to hammer like 100 calls a day, and it was soul destroying. Left that, went into then kind of an early, it was called CRM, Customer Relationship Management, which I guess is an early guise of CSM, for a company that would sell financial information into banks, hedge funds, law firms, that kind of thing. So still quite sort of stiff collar kind of stuff. And then came back, worked for a startup as kind of sales, CSM, janitor, you name it, everything.
Mm.
A couple more of those in varying degrees of sort of startup scale up, a couple of sales roles, and then where you and I first met, into Decibel Insight at the time,
mm.
as a CSM. Well, actually as an account manager to begin with, because I had done sales and I wanted to then, I didn't really like the pressure of a quarterly target in sales. Mm. And it wasn't, you know, for me it was always about, can I, off the back of a good relationship, I can sell more stuff.
But yeah,
with sales, it's all too quick. And so with that in mind, this account manager role, which is, for those who don't know, like a kind of a mix of looking after account, upselling it, and, you know, getting more money out of them for in its basis.
Getting people to buy who are already invested.
Exactly right. And that was supposed to be the role at Decibel, but within about 3.5 minutes, it changed to customer success.
Yeah,
and that was that. And that was the new world, right? The brave new world. Which actually was cool. So there was four of us, right, to begin with, and plus Gemma.
Yeah.
It was great. It was really, really enjoyable. And that's, you know, from there, that was what, 6 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Here we are today.
Amazing. Yeah. And my next question off the back of that. So in your role today, walk us through like what a typical day looks like, or a typical week, because I know no 2 days are the same.
Mm. So to give you an example, actually yesterday we had a sort of I wouldn't call it a crisis meeting per se, but one of my biggest clients, there's a competitor, you know, doing the usual, you know, content scroll. I'm sure you probably know well. I'm not sure I mentioned that, but that's the typical. a common competitor for Bio and I in our Decibel days. They're in at one of my big clients, and they kind of got in through the back door. And we had to go and reset expectations and go, look, you know, you're just using one part of the software. We've got a much more holistic vision than these guys,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. Then from there, back to the office and, you know, a bunch of internal meetings about clients and making sure, you know, clients are, like I said, getting what they need and making sure they're attending, you know, webinars and getting thought leadership. Mm. And then, you're right. It varies from day to day. But yeah, like I'd say probably of a week, roughly 50% is like talking directly to clients. The other 50% is running around trying to corral the right people to make sure that the shit that I say is right. Mm. Mate, you've got like quarterly business reviews, QBRs, right?
Mm. To
use the initialism that the industry does. You've got those sort of percolating away in the background, and so there's always a bit of like collaboration with the other teams. I think the difference to when we were at Decibel to Medallia now is that a QBR involves 7-8 people, all different ownership of different parts, whereas at Decibel it's like, right, I'll just do everything.
Yeah,
I'll knock it out probably, you know, 2 hours before we have to go in there because it's just a blueprint.
Mm.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, but yeah, now it's much more collaboration.
Would you say that there's a lot more collaboration in the QBRs you're doing now because the company you've mentioned, like, it's just a bigger company and like it's genuinely truly enterprise, whereas maybe where we were part of more of like a startup company, it wasn't so enterprise, so yeah, we had to do it all ourselves.
It makes spot on. Yeah, like these guys, when they buy software, they also spend an inordinate amount of money.
Mm.
You know, like six figures comfortably on managed services.
Mm.
So the guys who are smarter than us know how the software works and how to position it, implement it, etc. So those guys have to play a part because they've got a budget, they've got to manage year round. The client needs to know that, but also the client's spending more money,
mm-hmm.
on probably what is ultimately a more strategic bit of kit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Decibel is a small part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have that and other parts of the suite, then you're going to need more people involved.
Understood. And putting you on the spot, you know, you've mentioned the fact that some clients are spending hefty sums on managed services. What is it that you're doing in preparation for the QBRs now, which is helping, I suppose, to actually drive value? Because especially when you're on LinkedIn, you see that people just do these QBRs that are useless and people don't want to sit in and they switch off. So is there anything that you and the team are doing specifically to make sure value is being driven during these QBRs?
I think It's a good question. One I battle with, because LinkedIn is a funny space where you sort of live in this world where you're blinkered by customer success and everyone, you know, wants to, you know, be
guru.
Yeah, man, right? There's a couple
a trailblazer.
A couple of guys who chirp away. I'm just like, oh, shut up. Like, come on. Yeah, obviously. I think, you know, the value is in making sure you're aligned to their vision.
Mm-hmm.
In previous days, it's quite difficult because what we used to do was very specific to one very small part of the business. But now, so we look at what's called Net Promoter Score, NPS. So whenever you're on a website or had an experience, often they go, how was that? 1 through 10, you give a rating. You know, that then feeds back. And that's reporting at board level. So the software they buy from us, you've got to make sure that the PS team have got to make sure that's all in working order and that, you know, the money they've spent on implementation and services is working. And from my point of view, and with this, and typically with the sales guy, we've got to go, look, you know, is this working? And then go in and try and effectively pitch the broader vision, because our product suite's very broad and they've usually got, you know, max, well, some of them have 100% of it, but typically it's kind of 30 to 50% of it. And you've got to go, right, here's why you should be looking at other stuff and why that fits into your vision. You know, you are trying to, for example, stop people calling a call center because it costs money.
Yeah.
You know, here's how this bit of software stops that and will save you this much money, especially when times are getting tight.
And how do you make sure the right stakeholders join a meeting?
Yeah.
It's what they ask in every interview.
The most underwhelming QBR, you go in, it's like some mid-level person. You're like, this isn't really hitting home, is it? It's actually a bit easier at Medallia because of the level of spend.
You
know, some of these guys are paying 7 figures, right? So
their heads
roll if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, they own it. It's not that difficult. You know, if you don't get the full 2 hours of them, you'll certainly get in a half hour.
Yeah. You've got
to make sure that when you deliver that half hour, because you only get one chance, right, that it hits home. You've done your background previous, you know, with their champ, with sort of your own champion who reports into that person typically. Let's go, look, this is what we're thinking. Is that going to hit home with Mr. or Mrs. XYZ?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've touched upon the fact that Medallia is probably more enterprise than where we both were previously. How would you say enterprise customer success differs from traditional customer success? Like, what's the number of accounts you're managing now versus, you know, when you first got into customer success, and how do the engagements differ with clients?
So now I have 6 accounts. I think at my height, in my decibel days, it was probably like 26, 30 sometimes. What's the difference? Yeah, so, and because there's so many people involved in an account now at Medallia, you've got to just make sure everyone's doing their bit. Whereas Decibel is, you know, you were doing everything. You know, if it's a bug, right, who can fix this for me? Run around, make sure it's, you know, the bug is squashed, et cetera, et cetera. It's that really. It's more management of people now, as opposed to, it kind of was management people, but you've got to
be in the weeds and understand it a bit more.
Yeah. Like if I sit on technical calls now out with Decibel, I just sit there going, I get it, but I'm, you know, I can add zero value here.
Whereas
Decibel, I can probably go, well, you know, and get, you know, at least get the ball rolling. But now, you've got to trust that the people on your team can answer that question in the same way that I can answer a question about strategy and thought leadership, for example.
Yeah, and then because there are so many stakeholders, you know, at an enterprise level, how is it that you keep on top of everything? Is it like so many Slack channels? Is it like Monday boards? Do you have project management trackers, Excel?
Yeah, we don't probably have what we should, I guess. For someone, you know, when people, clients paying 7 figures, we should have, you know, a Miro or whatever, right? Client dependent. You know, I think the managed services teams use Smartsheets, which I think is a project management tool. But yeah, Slack channel. Slack is my life. Basically, you know, it has a whole screen at home.
Yeah.
And everything goes through there. Like, I don't really use email anymore, which actually can cause confusion, because when people do email, you miss it. You're like, was it on Slack? And no, it wasn't. Oh, it's on email.
Yeah.
So yeah, I collaboration wise, Slack is the best place for it, I think. And
I find it so hard to keep up with notifications on Slack.
You always will at that, though. Yeah, and I get quite. Is it called red badge anxiety?
Yeah.
Where even on my phone, he says, pointing at the ground. where this is a red badge. Even on an app I don't really use, I've got to go in and clear it away. So on Slack, I'm just because it's on my screen. I look at it the whole time, and I answer very quickly, and then get frustrated when people don't answer quickly. And like one of the sales guys the other day was like, yeah, it's useful, but I don't reply straight away. And I sort of, my nose out of joint. I was like, what? Because to me, it's like being in the office. If you're sat next to me, I go, hey, bye, that thing. Like we used to be, right? Now you can't do that. So the next best thing is Slack. But so, imagine in an office, I asked you a question, you just ignored me. I'd be like, dude, I'm talking to you. So that's what frustrates me about Slack. But you know, that's the world we live in now, right?
No, fair. And my next question was just going to be around, so you're managing 6 accounts at the moment. I actually manage about 30 once again. Now, how do you prioritize? Because there's not many accounts, right? But I suppose because they're so big, everybody's going to be under the impression that they're the most important.
Same way you do, buddy. The ones that are shouting the loudest. It is. I'd love to meet someone who's like, yeah, no, all my clients are, you know, under control. Nothing's going bonkers. I don't buy into that. There's always something going wrong somewhere. And it is, if it's not directly, it's indirectly your fault.
And just on that, like, if you had to pick out something that jumps out as like one of the most stressful things that's happened to you in your current role, would you be able to talk on it?
Yeah, because it happened yesterday morning, right? So, as previously mentioned, client who's been a long-term client of ours pre-acquisition, so they're a big UK, one of the biggest UK telcos. They were clients of Decibels. They're also clients of Medallia's. And so, you know, we've got to make sure everything's going well, right? And our competitor is in there and has, you know, been whispering sweet nothings in their ear. And so, truth be told, I didn't know that had happened, and I was like, pants, you know, I should have known that was the case. The sales guy, in my view, is a bit disengaged from the account. So we had a big call 2 days before, me, another internal colleague, and the sales guy with our sort of our champion at the client to get a sense of the meeting yesterday. The sales guy didn't turn up, had gone AWOL.
Wow.
So we were like, fuck, where is this guy? Yeah. You know, he'd been briefed by his SVP. He should be on this call and what to say, and he wasn't there. Thankfully, the guy that I work with used to work at this company and knows the person in question very, very well, and I do well because how long I've been on the account. And so we got information, and it was okay, and I think she probably noticed but didn't say anything. And then off the back of that, we had two more internal meetings over the next sort of 48 hours, one of which he wasn't on because he was, in inverted commas, ill. But he just never, just like, he didn't text anybody, didn't say anything. Then was like, oh, sorry, I'm here and this happened and blah, blah, blah. It's like, mate, just text us. And back to communication, right? If you know you're not going to be at an important meeting, which, you know, where there's six figures on the line down the road, let me know that's the case. And then he finally did turn up to the penultimate meeting. We put together a slide deck, a PowerPoint, with the help of sort of 6-7 people. He didn't really pitch into the meeting. And then I said to him, oh, and I had to go and feed my daughter because we're doing this late at night, right? I said, look, I've got to go and look after Marlo. Can, you know, do you need me to do anything? You know, at person, let me know on Slack if you need help. You know, 9:30, log back on. He's like, oh, don't worry, so-and-so will do it. Who's a product manager? I'm like, wow, why are you letting this person do it? Anyway, cut to me getting on the tube next morning to go to the meeting at 9:30 at their gaff.
Nothing's been done.
Yeah, and I looked at the slide deck on my phone, on the last little bit of underground that was overground, if you know what I mean, before I hit the tunnel, so I had signal. I was like, this dude's not touched it. It's okay, perhaps he's there now, he's just got on site and he'll make changes. Got into the reception of the company in question, got their Wi-Fi, and he's still not touched it. I thought to myself, you'd be kidding me, right? I said to him, then it's me, him, and Emma. And he was like, oh, yeah, just, well, it'll be okay. I was like, mate, this is a 6-figure account. You're the lead. You've not touched this document. And then he presented and he was like, yes, there are three main points. And he turned to the slide and there were 6 points. And he's like, oh, well, and other points as well. And I just thought, mate, A, without being crass, you're getting paid a shit ton of money to be the lead on this account.
Mm.
And you're not leading it. You're leaving it to me, to Emma, mm-hmm. to the rest of this team. And I need to have a word with him. But really, someone should be saying to his manager, that's not good enough. And that is, it's not typical, I'd say, but it's so dependent on, in that scenario, on the salesperson. Some are all over it, wouldn't let the dust settle anywhere. I think he might be checked out a bit, but that's where you've got to be able to think on your feet a bit. That's, I guess, one of my strengths, that kind of relationship, think on your feet. Even if, like, a bit like it was like a duck or a swan, your feet are going mad beneath the surface, but on the top, everything sort of seems serene and calm. But yeah, that kind of scenario where, and if you lose this customer who's paying big money, my comp gets affected. I've got a mortgage to pay, I've got a young child, I've got all these things, because this guy pissed off on a Monday morning.
So then I suppose my follow-up question to that is, okay, it does sound very stressful. How do you mitigate against that happening? And, you've mentioned the fact that someone needs to go to his manager. Like, what are you going to do to ensure the safety of, I suppose, this specific account moving forward?
Yeah.
Without giving away the secrets of the company, obviously.
Yeah. I've got to talk to the sales guy and be like, dude, that I think you should know that wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
The presentation was unfinished. We never got there because we got stuck in the weeds, as it always happens. But I need to talk to him, really. And then the next step is, we managed to buy more time in the meeting, because I was like, look, this clearly, we had an hour in the software world flies by like nobody's business. We're never going to cover everything. Let's come back next week and do more. So we bought more time, which means we have more time internally to rally, to finesse our message, and they're going to send us over some competitive intel as to why some of their analysts prefer the other software to ours.
Mm-hmm.
And then that allows us to formulate a game plan, basically. But it's about, there are now, the team on that is 7-8 people, 4 really directly, another 4 sort of indirect, and there's probably, a couple others helping as well.
And obviously it's been highlighted as a risk. Like, how far out from the renewal has this risk been identified?
Yeah, 6 weeks. Not ideal.
Okay, not ideal. Yeah. So not that I know any more than Tom, but I think just for people who might potentially be interviewing, I think the generic answer that interviewers like to hear is, trying to look at a renewal 6 months out and then every month after. But in a lot of times, sometimes there isn't engagement or the relevant people don't come on until about 6 weeks out. But I suppose, especially in our role as customer success managers, it's all about process and making sure, even if the customer isn't speaking to you, you put the things in place so when that time comes, you're ready with the information to tackle it. So we've spoken about the most stressful stuff.
Yeah.
What would you say the most rewarding thing about being a customer success manager is?
Mate, you know what? It's a funny old question, and actually something I've been thinking about in general, right? I've been here a long time. Don't want to stay.
The money. No, I'm joking.
Do I want to stick? Do I want to twist? Can I get paid elsewhere? Or do I want to stay here? Is there a longer vision? Do I like the software, etc. The thing I've enjoyed the most recently, actually, on one of my other accounts, who's a very well-known UK retailer, where you can get food and clothes.
Mm-hmm.
They are a client of ours on our survey part of the software. And the sales director, or SD in Medallia parlance, that I work with on that, we bounce ideas off each other. Whereas some other SDs, sales directors, so I'll use the full title, will go and be like, right, off I go this way, who's coming with me? And then a very, not dictatorial is the wrong word, but very much, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to sort of get in line. I don't like that,
mm-hmm.
because back in our day, we kind of ran the account and the salesperson would come in, at the renewal time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the case here. But this guy on the retail account, everything, we work it through. And we had it's partner-led. And by partner-led, it means that there's a sort of effectively a consultancy out there working on our software on behalf of the client, but we're still in it as well. And it's a big consultancy who are obviously going to pay a lot of money with a very big retailer, and there's been the politics is insane.
Mm.
But we've managed to navigate those choppy waters by getting the partner back on side who we thought might be throwing us under the bus or other software. They're not, so because of what we've done. You know, and that's, you know, wining and dining her, you know, getting friendly about it and what we want to do, and making sure she's selling the right vision, because they effectively sell the software for us. So we've got to make sure she's tooled up for the vision. But also at the same time doing the politics with the client as well, who had a suboptimal experience with us in sort of the year before I took over the account. And that rebuilding of the relationship and working really closely with the sales director and coming up with ideas and thinking, how do we make this better? I really enjoy, like, I have accounts that's the opposite. I think, oh, I can't bother this account. Like, the thing I love, I'm not going to do. Whereas on this other account, I am. And you come off a call and you're like, oh, you know, I feel quite energized here. And that for me at the moment is the thing that I really like.
Turning accounts around.
Yeah, well, turning accounts around, but collaborating with everyone, everyone being, you know, a nice shallow structure on the account. That's not like, oh, I'm in charge over here and you guys got to come with me. It's like, we're all in this together and bringing the right people in the right time and seeing the tangible benefits as the client's like, yeah, this is working. So this client in question is now looking at other bits of software and could go from, you know, paying what is like a quarter of a mil to a mil in the next kind of in next year or so.
And you mentioned that in the role you're at the moment, it seems like the sales directors, they're kind of in charge of the account and then you're kind of just like assisting.
Yeah.
How is that? And how involved are they? So it sounds like it's varied.
Yeah, it's subjective to the sales director. It's something I'm at peace with? I guess I have to be, really.
Yeah.
So by virtue of me saying that, I'm probably not at peace with it, but I'm okay with it. Is that because it's a software company, you got to sell. We got acquired by a big US private equity firm. I guess the idea is they'll then look to flip us in the next few years. So they got to wring out every single penny and dime and dollar at what we do. So sell. therefore, the sales org is at the front of the ship, kind of steering it to a degree. Although with a new CEO, he's more product focused. That might change, but it remains to be seen. But yeah, it means that ultimately they're seen as the lead, which I find a bit frustrating. Customer success at Medallia has not really been that stable, if I'm perfectly honest, since we got acquired back in our Decibel days, right? And that's when you ask that very first question, what is customer success? You go on LinkedIn, it's different things, different people. Like right now, what's hot is digital CSM, you know, where somebody's got, you know, you're a company, you've got two CSMs, 300 accounts. How do we automate this?
No.
And then you got AI and the robots are coming and blah, 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 right? That's a different ballgame. I'm high touch, five accounts, low physical touch, but high digital touch to 100, 500,000 accounts.
That for me isn't palatable. And I think, so obviously I'm in customer success as well. And the way I think I would define customer success, it is in the title, right? Ensuring that your customers are successful, and it's being both the internal and external champion to make sure there are positive outcomes for both the business and the customer. Right. So the positive outcome for the customer, to your point, is making sure that they're getting the value from the investment that they've outlaid on the software. And then for us as a business, we're not only getting the money, but we're getting the product feedback. We're getting case studies and we're getting all of, you know, those resources to ensure we are successful as a business. And I think we play such a pivotal role because, yes, there are people that might be more technically equipped than us, but, you know, for all of their technical abilities, they're not able to talk to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are...
plenty of those, eh?
Yeah. And it's the same with product people. I think, actually, you know, there's this phrase, you know, people buy from people. And I think salespeople are very good in that way, but people people also renew from people. And I think the best customer success managers, sometimes the software doesn't need to be the best or necessarily be working, but if you follow process and you have a good relationship with your stakeholders, they're always willing to go above and beyond for you and give you that information, which allows you to have the crisis meeting. If you don't have that relationship and it's a digital CSM, you don't get that crisis meeting.
Yeah.
And they go to the competitor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, to embarrass you a bit, there's one client who, when you went to your new job, was like, if buyer's not here, I'm not going to renew. Like, I'm texting by going, mate, how do we do this? I think, you know, we managed to, you know, with a bit of, you know, I helped a bit. And so, you know, I'm talking about, you know, yeah. She knew me a bit. And, you know, we managed to sort of smooth it over. And I think they are still, clients.
Yeah.
And the thing to your, you explained, by the way, customer success much better than I did. but it reminded me, in fact, the way I explain it now to clients, and this is quite cheesy, I think, but it resonates, is that when I'm back at Medallia and I've just seen client X, I'm wearing their t-shirt. So everyone sees, okay, that's a client. He's going around. He's trying to help them out. Okay, we're all trying to help out that client. Then when I'm at the client, I'm wearing my Medallia t-shirt, you know, with a view of helping them out from a Medallia point of view, getting that product feedback, all those things, be able to come back, switch t-shirts again. Yeah, you are that person. You know, you should be, and this is what actually kind of annoys me, is that we are the person that knows the most about the client.
100%.
And so therefore should be the most important, and I, you know, we're blowing our own trumpet here, obviously, but therefore should be the most important person because we know the most. So why is everyone coming to us first to ask questions and or get information from the client, or not going to sales or product or marketing, whatever? So yeah, it always baffles my mind, but I think that's probably because my LinkedIn, for example, is also customer success focused, that I lose, you know, I lose sight of everything else. But yeah, we've had this discussion thousands of times, right? It boggles my mind.
And that leads me nicely into, you know, we've spoken about, you know, LinkedIn and kind of seeing the same thing. What do you think you've seen that is a common misconception about customer success?
A common misconception. That's a good question. Nothing is springing to mind immediately. But I think, now it is springing to mind, in fact, is that, you know, we are a Swiss Army knife, but it's always, shit, something's gone wrong, you know, CS, can you sort this out? Yeah, often we do that, but actually, if you've done stuff well, you should be able to predict something might go wrong. Obviously, it depends on the software, right? You're beholden to a degree to how good or bad the software is and whether it's going to sort of stop working or not. But actually, we shouldn't be in the weeds chasing tickets, blah, blah, blah.
Just glorified customer support in that case.
That's not my job. That really annoys me as well. I'm like, I've got, you know, if I'm customer support, all I'm doing, I'm not customer support.
Yeah.
It's not my world. You're now adding another node in the journey here because you've got to go through me. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, sometimes, especially when you're highly responsive to clients, don't get me wrong, you always want to have an overview of what is happening in an account. But I think expectations need to be set with clients that if you have a technical issue, and also if you want the quickest response, then you should raise tickets directly with support because we have visibility into that. Because what happens if you go on holiday? Yeah. What happens if, like, the sales guy, you're off sick?
Yeah.
You know, they kind of put these messages into the abyss, and then that in itself creates a negative experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that can be mitigated by training customers to raise support. And sometimes you've got to be passive aggressive. So they'll ask you something and it'll be quicker if you raise this with support. Oh,
thanks.
Can you do this? I can, but you could also ask support. I mean, but I think one good thing about customer success managers is that we're all quite empathetic.
Yeah.
Or the better ones are. And that leads me nicely into my next question. What is a skill that you commonly see amongst customer success managers who you think are performing well?
listen, I think, you know, it's sort of, typically you go, oh, you know, the hunters, the sales guys are alpha. Sales guys, saleswomen, right? Guys.
Salesperson.
Salespeople, yeah, guys in general, in the general sense. Whereas CS, you know, takes their lack of a bit more beta. And I don't necessarily like categorizing people as alpha or beta because I think that's kind of nonsense. But you've got to be able to take a step back and go, you know, a salesperson will kind of be quite, well, not the good ones, and there aren't that many good ones really, like the really, really good ones, because they're also quite, they'll stop and listen. And you know, as they say, you've got two ears, one mouth, you know, therefore listen twice as much as you speak. And I think it's probably a common trait across good salespeople and good CSM is to listen, because there are things you can pick up from what the client isn't saying, you know, read between the lines type thing. But for me, yeah, like empathy.
Mm.
The other thing probably, which I'm not very good at, is organized.
Mm.
So I probably fly by the seat of my pants a bit through my inverted commas charm and ability to sort of talk my way out of a situation and then be like, oh my God, I've got to, you know, I've got to do everything last minute because I'm not very well organized. If I was organized, I'd be dangerous. But I'm not. I am, but you know, I remember at Medellin when we saw Alex's calendar.
Yeah, the colour code.
Like different colours. Yeah. And I was like, dude, what is this? Yeah. Like, it made me scared.
There were levels to the game. But I also think that, don't get me wrong, like some people, it's a bit like I'm a top trumps card, right? Some people, organisation might be really high, empathy might be high. Or organization is low, but you know, communication is high. And if you think about it a bit like you get 100 attribute points, you can't be 100 at everything. And sometimes, because I look at myself and I'm not 100% organized, but I think sometimes like the spontaneity allows you to have better customer conversation.
Yeah, I think you and I are probably quite similar in that regard. Mate, the top trumps analogy is excellent. Is spot on. I'm like, yeah, no, I can't. Of course, I can't be the top trump. Like,
yeah. You know, you could, but you can do some things really well. And I think it's about understanding what you do well. And, you know, coming back to, you know, customer success. And I suppose what makes a good customer success manager to you?
Yeah, just speaking there, I was actually kind of preempted the question because I was thinking about it in so much as it's not just you've got to get your client on side.
Mm.
Once you've got them inside and they're giving information, which you've got to then action, you've got to get everyone else internally on side as well. And so that you've got to build those relationships, which is where I think, you know, I'm 40 years old, so I'm, you know, the life of being in an office is not an uncommon concept to me. Whereas I think everyone coming up now, you know, it's hybrid. It's if not, you're fully remote.
Mm.
But being in the office, you can go and have those conversations. Now, funnily enough, you're sort of slightly wary because everyone's busy. You think, well, I can't just kind of walk up to someone. But I think that's very important, is being able to be the person that, it's like I said at the very beginning, that quarterback who can build those relationships with all the people internally, externally, client side, you know, software side, to get stuff done, because people buy from people.
Mm.
And if you're an engineer or managed services whose job is touched by customer success, but you find your customer success person, and we know a few, is like, hey, that thing, can you? It's like, mate, yeah, I'll get to it. You have to Slack me, email me, text me, you know, send a homing pigeon, like, I'll get it done. Just chill out.
Mm.
That's not, you know, and to sense that is a skill that we both have, but we both know people who don't have that.
Mm.
But have, you know, in the top Trump analogy, loads of the other stuff.
Very organised.
Yeah, super organised. You know, can smell risk like a blood can smell water. Like a shark can smell blood in water.
Very regimented process. Can follow things to a structure.
Yeah, but not like, but blinkered. Can't, like, you know,
deviate from a plan.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just to piggyback on what you said, I think for me, what I've seen works well for myself, and I think what I've seen from some of the best customer success managers is empathy, but being able to, I thought about it, transfer emotion to different stakeholders. And what I mean by that is, if there is a customer problem on an account, like something isn't working, it's being able to transfer the pain of the solution not working to the tech team to ensure that they provide a swift solution. Whereas on the other side, if we need stuff from the client, it's being able to transfer the need from the support team, like, hey, look, we're doing our best to try and help you. Please, can you help us with X and Y and X and Y? And it's about making sure that all interactions with the various stakeholders, both internal and external, are providing positive outcomes.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, from your point, right, is you can have an interaction with somebody, but they can look at it as nagging, and then they don't want to help you.
Yeah.
Our job is to make sure when we're having conversations internally or externally, people are coming back from those meetings energized, I suppose, to your point, and willing to go the extra mile for you.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we do quite well.
Yeah.
Together, like each other, and we get that from our stakeholders.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, right? It's another part of selling, right? You've got to sell. You know, if the client buys more stuff because they're happy, we all get a pat on the back. You know, that's it in its simplest terms. But yeah, there's also the human element. You know, clients, it's not just the fact that they want to buy software, it's the person that's bought the software probably has ambitions themselves to buy the software, make it work, show the ROI of it, and get a promotion, right? So you've always, if you can humanize it to that end and understand the things that drive them, then it helps, as you said, and bring the message back or articulate the message back better internally, so that you can then get it done, ultimately.
Fair. And then the next question I had is, so just in terms of customer success, the industry, what do you do to keep your finger on the pulse? And is there anything in particular that you're doing or any strategies that you're learning and trying to implement?
Finger on the pulse, I guess.
LinkedIn.
It's LinkedIn, right? I don't really have any more time to do any more sticking my finger on the pulse, if I'm perfectly honest. Just because, you know, job, young family, where's the time, right? But I think it's just common sense, right? And that's what kind of annoys me a bit about the customer success influencers, is they're just talking common sense. People are like, oh yeah, great, oh like, oh God, yeah, wow, that's really clever. It's like, no, it's using your noggin, mate. Like,
but
obviously,
common sense isn't common.
Well, yeah, no.
And I think that's point. Why, you know, people, they get the traction that they get. And I think one thing I've learned, especially when like I've read books, you know, I read a lot of self-help books. It's almost like a validation. And coming back to your imposter syndrome piece, it's like people know the answer to questions, but until you get that validation from a post with a like, or that reaffirmation from somebody posting a similar thing, you just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that is why people post on LinkedIn. I think just because, you know, we're trying to give value to the customer, I think from my side as well, especially when I was looking for work, I used a website called successcoaching.com.
Okay, yeah.
And to Tom's point, success coaching, it didn't really tell me anything that I didn't know, but it gave me a name for things that I just was doing. So do you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, do this renewal surgery strategy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
yeah,
it's just right. Talking to a customer.
Just put a wanky name on it.
Sometimes, especially for people who are looking to, you know, change jobs, maybe go for an interview, I think just understanding procedural terms, it makes you sound smart. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of obtaining jobs is about how you present yourself in the meeting, because the way you present yourself to your potential employer will give a good indication of how you're going to present yourself potentially to the client. And I think by understanding the terminology which will come from LinkedIn or from these websites, it can greatly benefit.
Yeah, it's like on that, you know, pivoting per se, because you mentioned it, but like if you are someone out there who wants to move into customer success and you're in an interview, it's your first one, you're like, what do I say? For me, my success in interviews, you know, it's just like I listen to the customer, right? They're the ones paying the money. Just listen. You know, because everyone's so keen to go in there and make their mark. But you can't make your mark really if you don't listen to what people say. And I think that's so, you know, that listen to what they say and the passion to get things right for the customer and deliver value for them. If you say those two things in an interview and, you know, you might not nail the rest of it, you should get a second chance. You know, if you muck up elsewhere, you should get a second chance if you've delivered that, you know, I listen and I care. In the, all the interviews I've done for people that I've employed or we've employed, yeah, the good ones care, right? The other ones just going through the motions.
And yeah.
That's what makes a difference.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, just piggybacking off the top of that, for anybody potentially who wants to get a start in customer success, is potentially looking to pivot into customer success, what would your advice be to them?
Yeah, get on LinkedIn, read the blogs, look for different definitions. You know, what do you want to be? A digital CSM who's happy to look after, you know, three figure. Like, as in, you know, hundreds of clients. Do you want to be an enterprise CSM? And, you know, those journeys can all end in the same place and start in different places, of course. You know, quite often, you know, you were an SDR into customer success, I was sales into success. Some people have just started in success as that profession proliferates across the industry. Speak to people. You know, I've had people that would reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, hey, Tom, I'm looking to get into this company, that company. I can see you've got tenure in customer success. Can I ask you questions? And you know, I'll help if I've got time where I can. I think that for me is probably the biggest step. But understand, you know, do you want to go enterprise? You know, by that I mean, do you want to work for, you know, a Medallia who's 5,000-6,000 people, or do you want to work at a small, scrappy startup where you are going to be doing what you said at the beginning, everything? Which is quite a good way to start, because then you're like, okay, and actually expose you to lots of parts of the business, and you might go, in fact, you know what, CS isn't for me, it's actually product or it's support or it's whatever else, because we've had colleagues who've gone into different parts of other businesses. But yeah, just do your due diligence, obviously, right? Read about the company and come with fresh ideas as well. Always, yeah, like put your spin on it, like personalize it a bit.
And you touched on this at the start, but I just want to go into this in a little bit more detail now.
About being a jockey. I really regret that. A really successful lawyer.
I was going to brief you before.
I know.
You didn't
want it. It's my own fault.
No, it's like, what would you say the biggest differences are between sales and customer success, right? Because I think we've spoken upon the fact that there are similarities in the fact that you've got to be quite people-centric and that there's a project management aspect to both roles. Why customer success over sales? Or just what are the differences? It's not necessarily one over the other.
The first thing that springs to mind is to go back to my botched analogy of sharks spending blood in water, is the minute sales are like, there's no money in this, there's no short, medium-term gain in this, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
See ya, cheers, next one. Whereas we don't have that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Luxury is not the right word. We're not like that, mm-hmm. is what I mean to say, in so much as, okay, there's no immediate win, but actually I've got a lot more time on my hands here to sell this vision and if there is more to buy, but yeah, I've got to keep them happy, so I can't be like, oh, there's no money here, buy. You've got to find other ways to placate the customer or help them hit their goals, and salespeople don't have to do that. They're, like I said, they're off chasing, because the nature of their job, right? They've got numbers to hit, and if they've got to be ruthless to go, sorry, buyer, you're not going to buy from me. I've got to go elsewhere. And then they might use the CSM, if they're clever, to keep that boiling away, to make sure that, you know, that you drip in the right messaging, so that actually you're nurturing that potential upsell, cross-sell, to then come back in when budgets are being drawn up or things change, and then they can come back in again and go, okay, right, now's the right time. But yeah, that for me, and to ask for money, like, that's the thing I always struggle with in sales.
So sales are cutthroat and they ask for money.
Yeah.
Do you say they're the main differences?
Yeah, I think so. And there's plenty of CSMs out there who I'm sure can be both those things. And by asking for money, I mean, I remember in sales, being like, that's a lot of money. Like, so, like, just put it down. And then, like, you know, that is $1 million. And then goes, don't say anything. Because I'm like, oh, the silence. I should feel the silence. And then because, and they're like, oh, why is this guy fidgeting around?
Yeah.
I mean, those are the things which, for me, probably separate them, I think.
That's nice. And I've actually got a sales leader coming on the podcast. So I'm going to ask them what they think the main differences are between sales and customer success. I think, just to add to that, I think with sales as well, there's almost a skill in nurturing a brand new relationship from scratch. You know, coming back to our point, I think in CS, I always pitch it as, you're convincing people who are already being sold on a product to just stay with you. And that's not necessarily always the case, because to your point, right, they might need to be resold because stakeholders have moved on, and then you do become a salesman. But for sales, it's all about new business. Sometimes they've got no idea what the company does. And if they do have an idea, there are competitors who you've got to objection handle and, you know, sell the value versus another competitor. So I agree that they can be cutthroat and not be afraid to ask for money. But I think sales will say that there's a little bit more to it.
It's actually funny you say it, right. So actually, the new initialism kicking around CS right now is NRR, net revenue retention.
Mm.
If you're on LinkedIn or you're reading whatever, that's the thing that, you know, you've got to, if you're going for an interview, you've got to be able to demonstrate, you know, and we got 120% NRR, like our target's 135%. Because what people are doing, they're selling into new accounts and then next one. Whereas really in the big enterprise space I operate in, you know, you think of, you know, just a name company, it's not necessarily a client. I'd know, like Ford, for example. Think from what we do, which is sort of it's customer experience software, ultimately what we do. How many touch points there are within an organization where they touch their clients and need to get feedback. It's endless. Buying a car, got a car, servicing a car. You know, I could sit here for the next hour and say those points. So really, the good salespeople are nurturing both new opportunities, but going, you know what, it's actually easier to sell inside a big four where I sell one bit of kit for 200 grand over here to one to this particular team who actually are in this geography. Then if it goes well, I can go and sell, I can replicate that for that same bit of software elsewhere, but also then branch out to other people for the other parts of the software. And, you know, Ford will probably spend tens of millions of dollars on the software, you know, to make their own experience better.
The land and expand.
Exactly. And I think that is the thing. And then there is that split between, are you a land and expand salesperson, or are you just new biz? And then you have the dichotomy of, well, does CS then do that as well? And that's a whole other kettle of fish.
This has been a wonderful conversation, Tom. Don't worry, not at the end yet. Still got a few more questions. My first one is going to be, do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy what you do?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Like I said, there's when I'm in and we're ideating and, you know, there's stuff to be done which can kind of move the needle, yes. Like the admin side, and I just turns me off immediately, dude. I've never enjoyed it, admin. You know, my, you know, personal admin's bad enough at the best of times. That's for me, right? The great, you know, expenses. I've used my own money to pay for something for work. I should be like, get that back immediately. How many times have I recently not got paid on something because I was like, I can't bother to do it now. I'll do it. Never get it done, then you've missed the deadline, which I guess probably is a lesson for me. But, you know, that sort of manana kind of approach to it.
And, okay, so sometimes yes, sometimes no. My follow-up question to that, do you feel that you're fairly compensated for what you do?
Not far off it, but no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, monetarily, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess then sort of in terms of professional standing, no. I don't think a lot of companies are tuned in to how important, if done well, how important customer success can be in terms of retaining and growing accounts. But I also think that's CS themselves probably suffer from that.
Mm.
How do you get a seat at the table? How do you demonstrate value, like, you know, NRR? Okay, well, here's my plan for NRR, as opposed to leaving it with the salespeople. So yeah, to sort of turn that conversation question to two things, monetarily, but I think that's still, you know, you look on LinkedIn, there's some that go, you know, CS lead, $40,000 a year. You're like, wow.
Yeah. That's a
starting salary, not starting, but like, it's pretty close to, you know, a year or two in. And versus, you know, I was on Reddit yesterday and I was following a customer success channel on Reddit, and the guys in the States were talking about it. And they were saying, I think some of them, like, I am a top end individual contributor at a big enterprise company, and I get paid like $170,000 base, 20% comp.
That's not bad.
And they said they've seen, you know, they're like, can you get to 200,000
without
going to management? And someone's like, I think I've seen it.
yeah.
I think, you know, the holy grail. But that's the US, where you're going to get paid 20% more just because it's the US. It's changing here, definitely, and will only change more because I think customer success is only going to grow more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of the question, I think the actual financial compensation, and I think the compensation of awarding merit to a job and the role and the importance you can play in everything that goes on, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening, and some people do get it, and when they do, that's the bit of the work I enjoy because I know I'm valued in this.
Mm.
Whereas there's somewhere I go, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I don't think anything would change this account because the salesperson's doing it all.
Mm-hmm. And just taking a step back, so you've mentioned that, okay, you might not necessarily be completely financially compensated. To anybody who's listening to this and they're chasing like a pay increase or a promotion, what would your advice be to them, and what steps would you try and put in place to, if not immediately secure it, just know that 3-6 months down the line, you'll be in line to hopefully get either a pay increase or a promotion?
It's not. Yeah. Make sure you're having this conversation with your boss so they know that is your desired outcome. But I think that, what is it, the phrase they use, you know, do the work of the job you want, not the job you have, right? So if you want to be a manager or you want to be, you know, a senior CSM or enterprise, act that way, do that, go the extra yard, right? And I think that's probably the thing that will help. Try and get it, you know, oh, come up with new initiatives. You know, look at LinkedIn and see what the community's saying. Be like, well, we don't do that here. I'm going to own that. And just go and do it. And I think definitely in the software world, to seek permission is to seek denial. Just go and do it. And if it doesn't work out,
asking for forgiveness is better than asking permission.
Right. Yeah.
And just to quote one of my guys, Jay-Z, he also says, the closed mouth doesn't get fed.
Yeah.
And what he says with that is, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
So you have to be on the ball with that.
Yeah.
Tom, this has been great. Just a couple more questions before we go into a quick fire round.
Okay.
The first one is, what do you feel, or do you feel like you have a good work-life balance at the moment?
Yeah, I do actually. And that for me right now is, you know, my daughter's 1 3 weeks ago. And I don't know how people lived previously where they'd leave in the morning, come back and they wouldn't see their kid apart from weekends, you know, for the first few years, and that just blows my mind. So, you know, I get to work at home. I can work, as long as I get my work done, I dare say I could work 5 minutes a day. That, that's, you know, I'm being facetious, but the point being is that if you think you can get all your work done in a certain amount of time, which isn't a 9 to 5 or a 9 to 6, have at it, horse. But, you know, if you don't, then there are repercussions. So for me, my company is very flexible, thankfully, with that. And so I get to see my daughter several times during the day, and you know, she's smiling, she's learning to walk. It's amazing. And that for me is really important. You know, whereas, you know,
like, oh, she's walking.
Yeah. Like, she's congrats. On the, like, yeah, needs a bit of encouragement, but she's doing it. And it's honestly, she gets really excited about it because we both get excited about this. So she does as well. And to see those things, I'm sure there are dads out there, you know, our dad's age, who probably might not have seen their kids walk for the first time, heard about it from the mum or the nanny or the nursery or whatever. Whereas I was there for it the other day. It was amazing. And that, you know, back to your conversation question, is actually...
You can't put a price on
that. Yeah, right.
Like, there you go. Yeah, and just in follow up to that, you've kind of answered it there, but putting the child aside, or no, you can use Marlo as an example. How do you unwind, right? Because, you know, we've spoken about how work can be stressful. What is it that you're doing outside of work to relax? Is it going to the gym? Is it playing football? Is it, yeah, watching Marlo take her first steps?
Yeah, a number of things. I've got into CrossFit in the last year.
Oh, Matt Fraser in the offing.
Yeah, no, mate, nowhere. A long, 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 long way off that. Mm-hmm. But that's nice. I do that 3 times a week, and that's, you know, it's, the regiment of that is good. You know, there's you know, lunchtime and a lunchtime and an early morning. The early morning's tough, but it's good, you get it done. And because I've dedicated sort of, well, not a year, but sort of, I guess, 10 months of my life to it, you know, I've seen actual gains. Like, I never was very good at committing to the gym. You know, I was very sporty as a youngster, but you know, you can't play sport 5 times a week because you've got a life, right? But now with CrossFit, I feel like, you know, I'm dedicated to something, and I enjoy it. You know, not when I'm having to row 1,000 meters in sort of 2 minutes. That's rubbish. But once you've finished it, it's great. 5-a-side football, which you and I every now and again play together. And yeah, my daughter really. Yeah, I mean, you know, Netflix, blah, blah, blah. You know, Succession obviously is hot to trot right now. and yeah, looking after the sprog.
Yeah, lovely. I'm happy that you mentioned CrossFit, because I was thinking about this today. I'm about to sign up to Third Space.
Okay.
And you've heard it here first. I'm going to get them to sponsor this podcast, because goodness gracious me, that place is expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You just want to give me free membership.
Yeah, buy's getting paid well enough.
I'll mention Third Space every episode. If not, I'll continue going to the gym. Yeah. It's totally up to you if you're watching.
I love it.
But no, Tom, this has been a great conversation. Just before we get into the quick fire round, to kind of summarise, what would be like your final bit of advice to anybody listening to this podcast? It doesn't have to be about work. It can be about anything. What is one piece of advice you kind of live by and want the listeners to hear?
Try and read a room. Go with your instincts, I would say. I think everyone these days is very fast to second guess themselves. And then invariably you come back and your instinct was right. It won't always be right, but that's how you learn and grow. You trust your instincts. I don't dive in. Like, when I say read the room, is like, look around. People's body language can be so important. You can sometimes spot the person who's uneasy and, you know, give them words of encouragement, that kind of thing. Yeah, don't dive in, you know, and don't dive in and trust your instincts. I think for me, probably the two things.
Nice. Well, Tom, thank you.
No,
on to the quickfire cues.
Okay.
And then we've got a closing tradition before we wrap up.
Okay.
But first, work from home or work from the office?
Office.
Ooh.
Well, okay. can I say hybrid?
Yeah, you can. Money or happiness?
Oh, happiness.
No, I'm joking. Favourite day of the week?
Thursday.
Oh, that's 2 for 2 so far. Time in a group or time alone?
In a group.
Travel to the past or travel to the future?
What a question. Oh, the future, but again, both.
Favourite book?
Favourite book that I've read recently is, you know, I've annoying enough, I've got the name, but it's a trilogy based on the Mexican drug cartels.
Twilight. No, I'm joking.
No. What's it called? Dogs, not Dog Day Afternoon, but something Dog. Day of the Dog, I think it is.
Okay, cool.
And they're amazing, if anyone likes reading.
All right, nice. Night out or night in?
Out. They're few and far between these days.
I'm going to keep this in, but I might ask, who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
Okay, good. Yeah, that, everyone does that. Name a book you think everyone should read. So I know you said your favourite book, but what's a book everyone should read?
Mate, that's a...
I'm going to answer for him. The Almanac of Naval Ravikant.
Very good. What's that?
Naval is just like... So he's in like the SAS world, okay. But he's just like the most philosophical person, and he didn't actually write the book. It was written by, I think that it was wrote by Casper Jorgensen. Okay. And it's basically excerpts of his tweets and his like methodologies and his thoughts towards life.
Before, yeah.
Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed that book. I hope I've not butchered the explanation of that. And then finally, I know you're on this podcast. Are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment? Any to recommend to listeners?
Yeah, I listened to too many, actually. I was just saying when I got here, the one called Smartless. These guys don't need a plug because they're Hollywood A-listers, but it's three guys from Hollywood. So Jason Bateman, who's in Ozark.
Mm.
Will Arnett, who's the voice of Lego Batman, but been in loads of other stuff. A comedian. And Sean, his second name I forget, but he was in Will and Grace. They talked to other Hollywood people. It was very good. I listened to a bunch of rugby podcasts. So I love rugby.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Buxton. Who was part of Adam and Joe back in the early 2000s, late 90s. Make too many podcasts. I like genuinely, I've got to the point where I need to stop listening to podcasts and play music and read like The Week on my phone.
There's no such thing as listening to too many podcasts.
Well,
no, I'm joking.
Well, yeah, no, because I listen to them like in the morning when I'm getting ready to go to work or getting ready to go upstairs to the office. But I love music. And so Tom Ravenscroft's show on BBC Radio 6, for example, is really good for new music. So I try and make sure I just... listen to music every now and again as well.
Okay. Tom, well, you've been a great guest. I hope you've enjoyed this.
Yeah, it's great.
We've started a closing tradition on this podcast. And basically it goes like this. So knowing what you know now, and based on everything we've discussed in this podcast, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self? And knowing what you know now, would you still... want to get into the same thing that you're doing?
Sixteen-year-old self, keep studying maths. For God's sake, you're studying maths. Like it is important. It really, like you're like, oh, this is rubbish. I hate it. Keep doing maths.
I love that.
And yeah, I kind of feel like I'm landing customer success. I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. You know, so you know. Did I want to be a professional athlete? Of course, but I wasn't good enough on all these things. So I think that, and that comes back to your money and happiness. Like, you know, if you want to go and be a carpenter, I'm sure, you know, the top carpenters out there might earn a lot of money, but, you know, you're the rest of the, you know, the 66% might not, but they might be happy. So I, you know, understand your motivations and follow then your dreams in that regard. And like, if you love it enough, you know, it should pay for itself ultimately. And you know, I don't know what that was for me, but I know what I'm doing now, and I know there's aspects of it I like, and I want to keep plowing into those. And who knows, it might not be customer success where I end up, but it's the sort of the tenets of customer success can probably help me go potentially elsewhere.
Lovely answer, Tom. Thank you so much for today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, guys, make sure you check out this podcast. This has been What My Best Friend Does with me, your host, Bio. Over and out.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you.
That's it. We're done.
Nice one.
Good. Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What My Best Friend Does. Please make sure to like, share, comment, follow, and let me know. What other professions do you want to hear about?